Welcome to our Diocese of Cleveland Innovation Series. I'm speaking with Patty Normile, the outstanding principal of Mercy Montessori School, an exemplary Montessori school serving preschool and elementary grades in the Archdiocese of Cincinnati. The school enjoys a wonderful history and tradition of excellence. Patty, tell us more.
Yes. So Sister Jacinta Shea of the Sisters of Mercy was the foundress of our school. And she was encouraged to start the school by the Sisters of Mercy when they had just erected the building that we're in. It was supposed to be a novitiate for the sisters long term. And she had a small space. She had one room in this five-story building that she was able to use as a school. She literally walked around the streets of Cincinnati and said, "I'm opening a school. I'd love for you to come. It's going to be Montessori." She went and got her Montessori training actually in Italy. And so, you know, she had a really robust history of education and the philosophy. And the other nice thing about our school is we've had a partnership with Xavier University's Montessori training program through the history of the school. And unfortunately, they've gone through some major changes in the last 2 years, and they are reducing their Montessori efforts instead of increasing them, which really has us concerned. Nonetheless, there are plenty of Montessori training centers around. So what's interesting about our Catholicity is because of our sponsorship with the Sisters of Mercy, we in the Archdiocese are kind of a unique entity because we're not parish affiliated. We're actually just a sponsored school with the sisters. So we're considered an independent Catholic Montessori school in the Archdiocese. So we're not owned and operated by them. We actually have our own board of directors, and the sisters have the legal sponsorship with us. So that's kind of a unique little quirky thing on the side. One of the things that I think is really key in, first of all, understanding some of the premises of Montessori so that as a future thinker, you can kind of think about the long-term planning that it'll take to do a private Catholic Montessori school. And that is, in the Montessori system, there are three age groups that are considered in one community at a time. So for your pre-primary child, you would have 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds together. And then in the elementary, you have that as well as 1st, 2nd, and 3rd graders in a community, 4th, 5th, and 6th graders in a community, and 7th and 8th graders in your junior high. What I've seen through my lifetime, when I first came to Mercy, our junior high program was just starting. So it's taken us a good 35 years to get to the point of the enrollment for that. But that shouldn't be a deterrent in any way. I'm just mentioning this so that you can, when talking to boards or families about Montessori, that it's an understood factor that it takes time to foster the community and to get that culture understood. So if I were in your shoes, I would be thinking, or the parish would need to think about setting up a preschool community and a 1st, 2nd, and 3rd grade community first. And whether that's 1 classroom or 2 classrooms of each, that would help you to then build into the upper elementary at the end of that cycle. So a few of the wonderful attributes, what we have done is with our curriculum, we have used the archdiocesan standards and suggestions for time allocations to be sure that we have not only the state standards being met, but also the religious standards taken care of for each of the grade levels. So our 3s and 4s don't actually participate in religion, but kindergartners do. Mm-hmm. And then 1st, 2nd, and 3rd graders, we have it built into their schedule. We have a fully trained religion teacher who received the catechesis of the Good Shepherd training as well. And so that has been a wonderful part of how we've operated. And for many Catholic Montessori schools, what they've done is they have integrated what's called the atrium model of religion class within their classrooms. We actually have religion as a pullout, and you have to decide for yourself which you would want to go with. But the model that is done for the Catechesis of the Good Shepherd program is pretty amazing. Are you familiar with that program at all?
A little bit familiar with it. I've heard about it here. I know some of our catechetical leaders are familiar with it and have used it in their either the PSR or have used components of it.
Sure.
We did have, as say, we currently don't have a Montessori Catholic school here. We did have one not that long ago. That's probably where I first heard about the Catechesis of the Good Shepherd.
Yeah, interesting program. That was actually developed by a compatriot of Maria Montessori's who was a theologian at the time. Her name was Sophia Cavalletti, and she knew Maria Montessori. Maria Montessori was telling her all about her classroom, and they had, you know, the parents were asking, can you help us prepare our children for the sacraments? And so Maria asked Sophia Cavalletti to come and see her classroom. And then the two of them started developing the materials together. Sophia's knowledge of theology helped Maria Montessori make all these hands-on materials that are just so beautiful. And I mean, there's a miniature altar set and miniature baptismal font, etc. So the kids can get to know the actual names and understand more of what they're seeing when they go to church, which is pretty brilliant. So that also is something that I think anybody who's looking to do this wants to take a look at, not only Montessori training, but also the Catechesis of the Good Shepherd, because that is such a great complement. Or the other option would be to have a parish school that has some of the classrooms have the Catechesis of the Good Shepherd as your foundational religion program. That could be an option. I'll tell you that the hardest part right now, and we're seeing it across the board, as you know, is finding the right people to run these programs. And I was just reading today an article about the true importance of the educator. And, you know, if you get the right person, you can do anything. You know, if you've got a person who can manage the kids and understand the curriculum, you're going to be fine. But with the true sparsity of educators right now, and especially those in Montessori, that is going to be the number one hardship that you will face as you consider this whole option.
Can you talk a little bit about what it takes to become a Montessori educator? And in addition to being a credentialed teacher, there's a requirement above and beyond, right?
Right. There are some colleges that offer a Montessori training program as a bachelor's program. And that's actually how I did my training at Xavier. I received my bachelor's in Montessori and then went ahead and, as I aged, went ahead and got a master's in Montessori as well. But the norm is most people get into it after they have done a bachelor's in education or some other field that's related in some regards. And the typical profile of a Montessorian is, you know, I was teaching, I got frustrated that it was too much of the same thing every day. I didn't have flexibility. I didn't have freedom to work with what the kids were interested in, when the kids were interested. And I found Montessori and I loved it, you know? So more of the programs are considered a 2-year commitment. And through the American Montessori Society, there are numerous programs around the country that are training programs that typically are an intensive 2 summers with classroom or virtual components that are taking place during the school year. So that's an option for getting that professional development taken care of. Honestly, the biggest component to Montessori is understanding not only the breadth of the materials, but also how to manage all of the materials and the classroom management aspects. And that's probably one of the most challenging things in today's world of Montessori teachers, because with the lack of teachers available, having interns, the whole role of an internship has changed greatly, as well as the training programs have gone to more virtual models anyways.
Would it be typical that a teacher would be sort of an apprentice teacher with another Montessori teacher?
Right. That was my experience as an undergraduate and graduate student, is that I was able to be in that capacity as an intern and then took on the role of full teacher. Now it's a little bit different, and they're managing it and they're having success with a lot of the online education programs. But you have to imagine that that's going to look differently at the end than someone who has the support for that full 8 hours a day in the classroom and is able to observe and learn from a partner teacher. So I think right now, since the pandemic, I think this is really an interesting time for not only education as a whole, but for Montessori as a whole as well. There's a lot of flexibility that's been worked into training programs, and there's a true desire to make sure we have enough Montessori teachers. And so more of the training centers are becoming more and more creative with how they're getting that done. Now, you guys are pretty fortunate in the Cleveland area, because there's a very renowned school, the Hershey School, is near you. And that is like, that's like one of the Mecca Montessori schools that was created in the 60s. And it would be considered comparative to our school, Mercy, but I don't believe they have a Catholic component to it. I think they are a non-denominational school. But they have the curriculum down pat over at the Hershey School.
Okay. There.
Yeah, that would be worthwhile to drive out there and check them out and just kind of see what they've done. And then you could kind of imagine, okay, if we could put in the catechesis of the Good Shepherd, blend those two, what would it look like for some of your parishes? Might be a neat field trip.
Definitely. No, that's exactly the kind of outcome we're hoping from this. You know, we know nobody goes from reading an article to starting a Montessori school, but
absolutely, but
crafting that vision of like, this is what it could be.
Right. Well, honestly, Montessori has an interesting perception from many people, and there's a lot of misunderstood components. A lot of people think that a Montessori education is a free-for-all, and it isn't. It is scientifically based. Maria Montessori was a pediatrician before becoming an educator. And the whole beauty of her program is that she recognized that because of her knowledge of how the body grows, that many traditional education forms are not matching the natural progress that a body goes through and your brain grows through. So she was instrumental in getting that language acquisition piece to the younger children at a younger time, because birth to six is when that's taking place. That's when those synapses can get together. And so having that biological information of how your body is taking in information and what your brain is doing is so crucial to understanding what you should be offering children at the different stages of their development, which is why she has those 3-year cycles built into the school system that she wanted to see happen for children. The other thing that I think is pretty amazing about what we do is, because of her, you know, the time that she was alive, it was during World War I and World War II that she was trying to get her education off the ground. And when you look at that, what was going on at that time, she was really, really concerned about raising children that were not isolated in regards to their purpose on the planet. She wrote quite a few books about peace education and how important it is to be an advocate for peace. And that comes through being open to meeting people of other countries, of other religions, of just opening yourself up to recognizing that you are part of something bigger. And so I would recommend to your boards and folks who are thinking about this to spend some time reading her works on peace education, because philosophically, I think they match so well with what the Catholic social teachings are. You know, she was one of the authors of the United Nations Rights of the Child document, and really wanted to see the next generation of children be peacemakers and global citizens. And I think when you think of how here it is almost 200 years after she lived, and we're still having those same conversations, yeah. I think it's pretty amazing. Getting back to some of the considerations, so, you know, the teacher training is going to be something that really needs to have a lot of thought, money, and practicality behind it. You're going to have the finances to be able to either sponsor teachers that want to go ahead and get that certification, or draw them in with a healthy salary for those who are in Montessori. And I'm going to be really upfront with you right now. It is tough to match salaries with some of the public school systems that have Montessori in them.
So are you saying that in addition to, I mean, I feel like our independent and parish Catholic schools struggle to compete with public districts baseline, but is there even a higher premium for Montessori trained teachers than by the public school?
So in Cincinnati, we have three public Montessori schools. I'm sorry, it's four. Two elementary and two high schools that are Montessori. And we've seen a number of folks who have worked for us jump over to the public system because of the salary basis. Mm-hmm. Even though the Catholic part is important to them, there's the reality that they have to feed their families. And so, you know, that is also, we have become more competitive, Mercy itself. Since we're not owned and operated by the Archdiocese, we have our own salary scale that's different than the Archdiocesan scale, and it's higher. And that has taken time for us to be able to get to that position to be able to do that. So that's another factor that needs to be discussed and figured out. Is that going to be even feasible for you all to consider? And if you're, I don't know what kind of grant system you guys have or professional development funding sources that you have. You could easily send them to the American Montessori Society's annual convention and some of their workshops. That resource is one that I think you really need to, your boards would need to take a look at, of the American Montessori Society, and maybe even talk to their executive director about the vision that you're looking at. They would have a lot of information for you. They do a publication of what the landscape is of the Montessori educators annually. You know, how many there are in the country, what the average salaries are, you know, how many elementaries there are, high schools, etc. So that is a really great resource for you as you guys are contemplating this model.
That would be incredibly helpful. Yeah, that's the American Montessori Society.
Yes.
The major point I'm hearing, though, is that the training, the premium on being an excellent Montessori teacher comes with investment on the institution side, and also comes with investment in terms of compensation to attract and retain great Montessori teachers then.
That is correct. That is correct. Because there are a lot of schools that say they are Montessori, but they might not actually have the accreditation or the training behind them. And that's something that you would want to be careful about. The schools that are standout Montessori schools are the ones that have invested in the teachers. you know, like I said at the start of this, if you have somebody that has the personality to connect with a child, whether they're Montessori trained or not, I mean, you know, great teachers are great teachers. And that's the same for Montessori. But unfortunately, what can happen is if you have somebody who is claiming to be Montessori but doesn't have the background in it, then what ends up happening is Montessori gets a bad rap that it's a free-for-all.
That's an interesting bias to hear. I can see, I guess, how people who don't take the time, or how you might get that misunderstanding, but
well, the other factors too, I mean, the philosophy, we don't use a report card that's an ABCD report card. We're not interested as much in standardized testing as many schools are. We do it because we have to, but the actual day-to-day instruction and development by a qualified Montessori teacher really shows those observations, those daily observations have far more weight than a lot of the testing structures that are part of the traditional school. So you have to have the buy-in from parents to understand that difference. For instance, you know, and it happens quite frequently, and parent education is such a big portion of starting a Montessori school, is you have to have your parents understand what you're doing. And in the startup years, that means making sure that they're involved in possibly helping to make some of the materials, or coming in once a quarter to have a specific topic addressed. This is why we do what we do. For instance, this past year, I had to have a nice conversation with one of our dads who, you know, his wife was the decision maker for education. And so at the first parent conference for a first grader, he was looking at the Acadian's test scores, came in hot and heavy towards the teachers saying, you know, I need to understand how we're going to get these test scores up, because I foresee my child going to a school like Princeton or one of the Ivy League schools, and I want to know what we're going to do to address that. And the teachers just looked at him and said, well, if that's your first goal, you're in the wrong school.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're about the whole child. We're not about the test scores. And we want your child to develop into a citizen of the world, a compassionate person with academic skills to be a confident person. And we're going to be working far more on your child's social, emotional development and academics than we are about a test that takes place once or three times a year. So again, that disparity will take place for many, but it reminded me in this situation, it reminded me that during the preschool years, we probably should have done a little bit more for the group that came in during COVID that didn't have some of those parent nights, to make sure that parents know what we do and why we do it. So We've had many conversations about parent ed in these last couple.
I would imagine the test score thing is, especially with this increasing transparency coming with those who are, anybody's using the EdChoice scholarships, right? There's a new growth metric coming for non-public schools. And I got to imagine that's something that parents are attuned to, or they're, I mean, I could see the parent who says, well, it's fine if you're not only about test scores, but I also want my kid's test scores to look good.
Sure. Well, and that is something, you know, we are an EdChoice providing school. We're reaping the benefits of that. And that as life has evolved in American education, we recognize that we have to have an understanding that we can't be the same Montessori school that Maria Montessori had. Obviously, times are different. But we can philosophically continue doing what we know is best. And I'll tell you, the one core thing that we fall back on consistently is what is truly in the best interest of the child. And if that is your founding question for anything in your classroom and anything that you do practice-wise, then you're going to have a win, because your children will win.
Yes. Yeah. That sounds like that's part of the parent education. I guess we expect the things that are going to improve those test scores are what you just described. Not drilling test questions, but educating the whole child is going to result in growth. And so the disconnect is the parent who thinks it's all about the test as opposed to it being all about the child, and the test is reflecting a fascinating child. Yeah, okay.
Correct.
But I can see that you've got tuition-paying parents, so that's a very important disconnect.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. The only thing that I want to mention about Mercy Montessori is when Sister set up our school, she really wanted our school to be a microcosm of society. And so she did not look at the parish model to be the model she wanted. She wanted to draw in families from every economic, you know, step, so to speak. And so we are fortunate because each year we don't ask a parent's finances until the very last step. But historically, since I've been principal, about half of our families are at the $100,000 to higher mark and half are below. And we have a very complex, and I don't recommend it. We have a sliding scale tuition base for our school. It's a blessing and a curse because it has provided us with a community that is socioeconomically diverse, which has also helped us to be racially diverse. So when you enter our doors, we do not look like with some of the other Catholic schools in the diocese. We are not an all-white institution. We have many families of not only different ethnicities, but also different faiths. And we're welcoming to that. And we feel like that's part of that diversity and peacemaking effort that is important. We don't shy away from our Catholicity at all. We make sure in our parent education for any families of other faiths that they recognize, well, your child will be going to Catholic religion classes. And if that's a problem, then you need to sort that out now. We aren't going to be changing that. But in any case, the finances that we're able to have and how we've done our budget is very atypical compared to many schools.
So can I assume from that on the sliding scale, the people on the higher end of the scale are in some ways subsidizing the lower end in order to make it?
Yes.
That's not as uncommon as you might think.
Our biggest expense is our salaries by far. And I'm sure that's the case for many schools, but that has helped us to be able to retain the Montessori teachers that we have and have the excellence that we do. The majority, our stat right now for trained Montessori teachers within our building is 17 years plus.
Wow.
So to have that, when you look at what the retention level is for a teacher, for principals, if a principal has lasted 4 years in an organization, that's pretty amazing. For teachers, I think it's a 6-year stat. So the fact that our average is 17 years plus is pretty amazing.
That is incredible. And 25 years of your leadership, too. It probably has something to do with that culture. And it's a culture that people don't leave.
Well, yeah. A lot of people say to us, you know, we just didn't know a place like this existed. And we're so glad we found you, you know. But I have to always say to people, I'm so glad you're here. And please recognize this is 55 years in the making. You know, we've had our missteps, we've had our evolution ourselves, and we've had exoduses some years. You know, you get some of the live wire in the community and they all want to march somewhere else, and that happens. But you're looking at a historical situation that is unique when you come to Mercy Montessori.
I wonder, are there certain ratios for a Montessori teacher? And this is how we get to the number of adults in the classroom. When you've got multi-age classrooms, if you have a swell of kids a certain age, they're gonna ripple through your school. You're gonna have to worry about staffing through all that. How much of that is a consideration in planning your school and your budget?
Sure. So we use a pretty unique model. First off, with the preschool licensing, we have to use the ratios that the state uses for those youngest, whoever is the youngest in the class, whatever that age group is, you have to go by that number. So the student to teacher ratio for a 3-year-old is 1 to 12. In our school, we have 4 preschool classrooms and we have 2 teachers in every room. So each classroom has 24 students in it. With that being said, our hope when we're doing enrollment is that we can have 8 3-year-olds, 8 4-year-olds, 8 kindergartners. Our 3 and 4-year-olds have a half day. Our kindergartners have a full day. The preschool second teacher leaves at lunchtime, and in the afternoon, we maintain that 1 to 12. It actually goes down to 1 to 10, and then sometimes 1 to 8 if the enrollment works out beautifully. For our elementary classes, we have in our lower elementary, and this was done by square footage as opposed to numbers of teachers or, you know, teacher to students. Because of the square footage that we have 2 fully trained Montessori teachers in each classroom, and the classrooms have a capacity of 30 children. So in that respect, it goes to a 1 to 15 ratio. Our upper elementary, which is 4th, 5th, and 6th grade, they too have a 1 to 15 ratio. But that whole schematic is a bit different. Instead of individual classrooms, it's a community. We have 2 teachers teaching math, 2 teachers teaching writing and reading, and 2 teachers doing the sciences. And the kids make a circle on that floor. During the course of the day, they go to the different classrooms for 2.5 hours at a time. So that's considered a community as opposed to individual classrooms. They have like a morning circle or a homeroom, so to speak, but they look at themselves as the Upper L community.
So yeah, just so I understand, all the other lower grades are self-contained classrooms then. Okay, yeah.
Correct.
Or that one Montessori, or the 2 Montessori educators, in the case of 3rd, 4th, and 5th, are teaching the math and teaching the reading and teaching everything. They're doing the catechesis of Good Shepherd there. Well, that you said is a pullout. Is that
catechesis in the Upper L? All of the teachers teach religion.
Okay.
For their homeroom.
Okay.
But as I said, in the way that we have done that community, they have a homeroom base that's multi-leveled, and that group goes from section to section. It's kind of like a quadrant setup. I wish I could send you the floor plan so you can see what I mean. So they rotate in a circle to reading and language arts area, the history, etc. And then our junior high has a community right now of 57, and we have 4 full-time teachers up there. So again, we're pretty unique in that student-teacher ratio.
Yeah.
It's about a 1 to 15 throughout the building.
So what's the total enrollment of the whole place?
310.
310, wow. Okay. That must be a real puzzle to figure out every year then, right?
Well, the beauty of it is that because of the Montessori system, you're looking at a third of your class being new every year, you know, except for junior high, you know, your 6th graders going into 7th and 8th. That's a half and half group. But because they're in the same groupings every year in your lower L, you're really looking at a third of those of the components being new into the community. And that's one of the draws. I mean, she said very clearly, there's no other place in society where you only work with 55-year-olds or
yeah, right.
You have to learn how to work with other children and people, and you have to be able to fluctuate from being a leader to a follower, you know, a new
yeah.
and having those different roles, one of the things that makes a Montessori program unique is that children really do come out knowing their strengths and weaknesses and being able to articulate what they need if you've done it right, if you as the adults have trained them appropriately.
Yeah.
And what we see in our graduates is that, you know, our kids are not afraid to ask questions and to say, I'm sorry, you know, so-and-so, I don't know what you're talking about when they go into their freshman year. They're often the leaders in their freshman year to be able to help the teachers in the high schools know what's going on in their classes. That we get a lot of feedback about that.
Good. That was my impression of started out as a high school teacher around here, and that's my impression of the kids from Montessori schools. When one of the kids who had a Montessori background had trouble keeping up with homework, or would occasionally say, "Oh, he's just adjusting to the structure. No, not used to the structure of high school, going on the bells." I suppose there's something to that, but the majority of kids had no trouble with that structure, and they were, as you described, well prepared leaders.
Yeah. Well, and you know, there's so many team-based opportunities in the upper L and junior high programs that figuring out who's going to do what and having those, what is now, I love the terms that are used now, executive functioning, you know, the skills of figuring out project management and being aware of your time and making sure you have your supplies, all of those kind of things. That's built into a Montessori education.
I'm so grateful for your time. And I just want to ask, thinking of our target audience here, what might you do differently if you're advising a school or you know, lessons learned? I shouldn't say differently, as you described beautifully, sure, the 55-year journey to this point. But yeah, what advice would you have for someone who's embarking on this journey, thinking about this journey? And I shouldn't say I'm talking just about parish schools.
Right.
We are, I mean, especially with the availability of EdChoice. I hope there are more Catholic schools in Ohio soon than there are today.
Right.
Great time.
Right. You know, I would say that this principle, I've learned a lot in my years in regards to the importance of communication with parents and staff. And, you know, leadership is such that a lot of times, in a Montessori school, you have to have a leader who understands the component that your teachers need to be able to have the opportunity to be a part of the leadership, and any way you can include them is important. I would say my biggest journey or reflection is that in my startup years, my first 10 years, I don't think I included staff members in on as much as I could have in heavy decision making. I'm much better about that. And we have much better structure internally, administratively, for us to keep a pulse on what's happening throughout the building. Just to give you some more clarity around that topic, when I stepped in, you know, we went from a model of Sister Jacinta, who was a single woman who was devoted to the church and had all the hours in the day and she lived in the building.
Okay. Yeah.
When I stepped in, I had a 6-month-old.
Yeah.
When we set up the structure for me, I hired an assistant principal, and I was fortunate that we had a budget that allowed that and that the board understood that I was going to need that help. If you're fortunate enough to have an assistant principal, my love personally is the preschool up to third grade. 4th through the 8th grade, I've grown to love, and I actually had the training up until the 6th grade, the Montessori training through 6th grade. But I learned that my passion is really for the younger children. So during my lifetime, I've had 3 assistant principals. The first was a gentleman who we worked together fabulously for the first 15 years that I was principal. And he ended up going off to be principal of St. Ignatius here in town, which is a highly renowned Catholic school. He was better off with the high school, junior high and high school kids. So that was a great compliment. And we kept with that model of having my assistant principals be more in tune with the fourth through the eighth graders. Leadership wise, I have to say my second assistant principal really came in with a plethora of team building skills. And I learned a lot from her. She really helped build our culture into the school that we are today. And my current assistant principal also. My current assistant principal came from the public school system, and she came more from the high school setting. What I've learned in each of those situations is whoever is with me needs to know that my skills are what they are, and we have to work in together. And I think that's something that I've learned through being a principal, to trust as well as to communicate better of what my strengths and weaknesses are, so that we can shine as a whole community instead of kind of piecemealing it. So that again, when you look at the statistics of retention of people, to know that turnover, when you're looking long term, you're going to want to have someone who is passionate enough to say, Montessori is my life, and I want to do it for my lifetime.
Yeah.
Because if it's going to be a start over every 3 year situation, you're not going to have the longevity that you need. Mm. And again, I was not a nun. But they saw in me when I went through my interviews that I had the passion to know that this was the career choice that I wanted to commit to. So as you're considering the leadership of the school, you need to consider what are those skills that this person is going to have and be realistic about it.
Yeah, we're not just looking for someone who's open to it or looking to try something out. We're looking for someone who is dedicated. Steeped in the Montessori method and desiring to, has a vision to perpetuate it.
Right. And who can articulate what they love to do and what they don't love to do in the realm of leadership. Because, you know, I can tell you one of the things I found out real quickly in those first 5 years is I hate those state reports. And I also am not great at technology. So I needed to hire people to assist me, to free me up to do what I do best. And that is a major, major learning for anybody, you know, anyone in administration. You have to figure those things out. But if I were in your situation and trying to build a school, I would say, ask those questions, you know, ask those questions of, what are you passionate about? What do you think you're going to need to make this happen for our archdiocese? You know, because people will be very honest if they know that you're on top of it and you're even asking the questions.
Yeah, we're expecting that, right?
Exactly.
We're not expecting individual perfection, but we want the whole thing to succeed together.
Exactly.
Great leadership advice for any kind of school, I think, not just Montessori, but it's evident that you're taking that to heart and have just an incredible operation going there.
Thank you.
Thank you for all of this time that you've given. I thank you for sharing your story and hopefully inspiring other educators, Catholic educators, and maybe future Montessori educators.
I hope so. All right. Wonderful. Well, thank you.
Thank you. God bless. Thank you.